Well, first off, I want to say thanks to Mark and the planning committee for the opportunity to come and be before you again. It's an honor for me to present to this group. There's many of you that are in the audience that are mentors and inspirations to me, and I certainly appreciate that. And I've seen lots of familiar and friendly faces over the last couple of days, and certainly glad to see everybody. When Mark made the call, I immediately said, yes, I'll do it. And then I hung up the phone and said, oh my God, what have I done? this topic, as I thought more about it, became more and more challenging. I think there's lots of obvious interest in both in the popular press and in the scientific literature about, you know, how can we improve quality grade and carcass parameters, what environmental influences are out there. You know, we've heard Pete and Dan both talk about some of the issues there that surround our business today from the end product standpoint. Mark sort of put the challenge to me about, well, as we try to improve those things, what are some of the sacrifices that we might have to make or in the pursuit of that give up? So I put on my thinking cap and hopefully didn't take too simplistic of an approach to answer some of those questions. And I think there's probably more answers than just what I've come up with. I want to give an overview of the talk and the things that I'm going to try and cover are just a little discussion about industry targets. And I focused most of my evaluation today on the improvement in marbling score or quality grade. As Dan pointed out in his talk and saved me from having to do it extensively in mine, the genetic improvement in quality or in carcass traits has primarily centered on quality grade. We've not made very much improvement, a slight improvement in ribeye area in a number of breeds, but almost no change in fat thickness, slight trend in carcass weight. But a bulk of the effort in selection pressure has been placed on marbling score, and I'll provide some evidence of that in just a minute. I want to talk about some of the additive genetic relationships that exist between production traits in our beef production system. I want to spend a little bit of time in an illustration of a single trait selection for marbling and what impact that has across multiple traits, both those that we have EPDs for and some that we don't. And then talk a little bit about value assessment. As we make those improvements in marbling score, how does that change the net merit of our production system? So I've used sort of a selection index approach to get at the value change, and we'll talk about that towards the end of the talk. And then finally talk about some other trade-offs as we implement breeding systems or breeding strategies to improve quality grade. What other things might we give up? And certainly heterosis might be one of those. So we'll dive into that. What are some of the motivators? And the speakers before me have talked extensively about a few of these motivators for us to improve carcass merit in beef cattle. Clearly one of them is value-based marketing systems that individually reward beef carcasses on the merit of their quality grade, yield grade, and conformance. Of course, we can't overlook the value of weight. Some nice research done here at CSU last year to illustrate that point. But about even in a wide choice select spread, about two-thirds of the value difference from carcass to carcass in a grid marketing system still comes from weight. So we can't ignore that either in our production or our selection strategies. Clearly, another one that's gotten a lot of press is national beef quality audits that have occurred over time. And really, the top 10 challenges haven't changed significantly over that period. We still face challenges with inappropriate carcass size and weight, inadequate tenderness, excessive external fat cover, and an inappropriate USDA quality grade. So some challenges in terms of the mix we provide to our downstream partners, feeders and packers, in terms of end product quality and merit. Seen some other slides like this, and I have to give my brother Dave some credit. He's a market analyst, and so I said, hey, I need some slides. So he sent me some slides, and this particular one illustrates that we've really not seen in the last 10 years a significant change in the mix of USDA quality grades. The top line, the red stuff there is the select. The green stuff is percent choice, and the blue at the bottom is percent prime. Those means haven't really changed significantly over that period of time. And so although we've made some selection pressure, we've not really seen that manifested, obviously, in the phenotypes of the progeny that get harvested at the packing plant. Maybe more concerning, and this might be a function of feed cost or price of corn, this particular plot illustrates the percentage of choice grading cattle that are in yield grade 1s and 2s. Those are the red and the downtrending line, versus yield grade 3s and 4s, which are the blue line that's uptrending. So as time has gone on, and at least in the choice grade cattle, we've just made them fatter. And that's a bit concerning in terms of the trend. I think Dan talked a little bit about maybe we ought to pay a little more attention to fat thickness. I think this this illustration might support that. Of course, fat thickness isn't the only criteria that goes into calculation of USDA yield grades. Ribeye area certainly plays a role there as well. And as Pete said, you can see there's a lot of seasonality that goes into that mix as well. I'm going to give Wade Schaefer both a little credit for this slide, and he's creatively scaled it, so it looks like we have a huge here's your implication, Wade, a big increase in marbling score, about a tenth of USDA quality grade improvement in the genetic trend in Simmental cattle. A number of other breeds would, in continental influence would have a similar kind of genetic trend. The British breed's a little bit steeper in terms of the improvement, but we've made at least genetic progress, we think, in terms of improving those, and which motivates, the at least from the additive genetic perspective, what things have we given up to get that in terms of correlated response and other traits. So with that, we'll ask question number one as we kind of shift gears into analysis part of the talk. And that first question is what is the average marbling score? I didn't know the answer to this, so to start off my data analysis, I thought it was kind of interesting. What is the average marbling score required for a pen of cattle to grade 80% choice and prime? And the choices you have there are small 20, moderate 0, small 66, or modest 25. I'd do a little math. I'd never done this exercise. I thought it was kind of an interesting result. So everybody's... I guess our time's up. Yep. Okay. Let's go ahead and... Okay. Okay, I can't see that very good, but... the choice, the most common choice was number 2, which was moderate 0. And then the next common was, looks like modest 25. And 3 there, which is the correct answer, small 66, is the third most popular. And so I actually thought, like many of you, that we'd have to be well into the modest grade to have a high percent choice and prime in the pen. But it turns out that we really don't have to move cattle that far to get a pretty good distribution of choice and prime cattle. And I did a little math to figure that out, and it's illustrated here, so hopefully you can see this. I looked at the percentage choice in prime, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% choice, and then computed with a little simple statistic math about the distributions there. What's the mean marbling score required for each of those categories? And of course, at 50% choice in prime, that means 50% select and lower, so that's a small 0 average. 60% choice and higher is a 5.2 or a small 20 average marbling score. 70% is 5 or small 41. 80% is small 66. And to be 90% choice, you've got to be right against the modest grade barrier there, modest 0 or small 99, to move into that 90% choice, which this actually was much lower than I anticipated. I went back and checked my math, and it is indeed correct. So that illustrates that we don't have to make a huge movement in the marbling score within a group of cattle to get them to grade better, assuming that the environment will support that. I've illustrated there in the third column the needed increase in genetic merit to move to each of those, and that's really just marbling score at that level less the 5.0 to move incrementally up there from a 50% grade base to each of the subsequent levels. So, of course, you need a full marbling score to move from a small 0 to a modest 0 or 50 to 90% choice. To illustrate how much genetic merit we need or genetic standard deviations to make that change, I just took and divided those needed increases in genetic merit by the genetic standard deviation. And I've gotten in red there a note. I found an error in my little typo, which really startled me the other day because I thought, oh my gosh, my math's not right. The math was right. I just made a typo when I typed it up. In your proceedings, I think I said the phenotypic standard deviation for marbling score is 0.77. It is actually 0.88 in the literature I reviewed, and so I used that number in the calculations. So I've showed there then the incremental genetic standard deviation you need to move from each from 50% to 60%, 60% to 70%, and so on, and the incremental genetic merit in terms of say EPD ranges, you need to improve. If you were, say, at a group of bulls that averaged zero for marbling score and you could get 50% grade base out of them, assuming management constant, to move to the 60% grade level, you need to use an average bull battery average of a marbling score of 0.2 and so on. Oh, one thing I wanted to point out. You'll notice that far right column, it gets the incremental increase you need to move from 60 to 70% is smaller than the increment you need to move from 70 to 80 or 80 to 90, and that's really a function of the distribution that we're selecting from. And that's illustrated here. The red distribution there on the left is for a distribution that has a mean or 60% choice grading cattle. The mean there is about small 20. And as we move the cattle up, the average in the pen, we're moving that distribution to the right, to your right. And so our marbling scores goes up to about a small 65. And what you see is the further we move that distribution to the right, the smaller and smaller that left tail gets relative to the small zero cutoff point. And that's why if we want to keep moving up in grade, we have to add progressively more marbling score to those cattle. So we'll go to question number two, just sort of get your input and view if you might be as surprised as I was in this part as well. Are there large antagonisms between carcass traits and other economically important production traits like reproduction or growth? Just a yes or no. Okay, so almost an even split. Well, that's interesting. I was when I first thought about that question, I thought, well, surely there's some big negative things that come along with this selection for marbling score in terms of correlation with other traits. And it turns out that if you answered no, you're correct. If you go through and look, and I'll maybe explain where I got these numbers first. Wade Schaefer and Mike McNeil and I have been working on a series of selection indexes for Simmental and Maine and Jew and Chianina. And Mike has really been the brains behind the project in terms of developing the simulation models. He charged Schaefer and I with parameterizing the models and developing the variance-covariance matrix structures needed to do the selection index. And so Wade primarily and with me in a few little spots put together a set of covariance matrices for both traits. If you remember in your selection index class, maybe in college if you were into graduate school, if not, this will be maybe new stuff to you. There's two categories of traits that we use in selection indexes. One of those are traits that we call selection criterion. And those are traits that we have EPDs published for that we use in our regular selection. So, you know, traits like calving ease, birth weight, weaning weight, milk EPD, so on and so forth. The other category of traits used in the selection index are those are what are called in the breeding objective. So those are really the economically important or economically relevant traits that we use to compute the selection index from. And so as I go through this talk, you'll see two sets of variance-covariance matrices or correlation structures, one for the selection criteria or the EPDs that we have available, and the other one for traits in the breeding objective and their correlation to traits in the selection objective or selection criteria. So what I wanted to show was if we make a change in marbling score, what's the impact both on traits in, by correlation, traits in the selection criteria, and also traits in the breeding objective. And I couldn't come up with a really nice way to organize those in tables to keep it clear, so I just left them in two separate groups, traits in the selection criteria and traits in the breeding objective. So this first one is traits in the selection criteria or the EPDs that this would be an example of Simmental that they have available for producers to use. So we've got stayability, birth weight, calving ease, direct, calving ease, maternal, weaning weight, direct, milk EPD, yearling weight, yield grade, and marbling score. And so I've illustrated there on the very right-hand block the genetic correlations between marbling and those other traits. The surprising thing to me was none of them had an absolute magnitude greater than 0.2. which says those are really relatively small correlations between the other traits in our selection criteria or other EPDs. So if we make big changes in marbling, we're not going to see very big changes in other traits that we have EPDs for on average in the population. Remember, correlations are population parameters. If we look at traits in the breeding objective, and I'll go through these across the top of that table, it's mature weight, milk EPD, fertility, survival, weaning weight direct, average daily gain, feed intake, dressing percent, yield grade, and marbling. And so then the traits in the selection criteria there on the left, and we'll focus on that very bottom block, and that's marbling. With mature weight and so forth across there, you notice that the biggest one is marbling and mature weight of minus 0.25. But again, very small correlations between traits in our breeding objective, or the ones that are really economically important in our selection models, and those that are in the selection criteria or marbling, which I found kind of surprising. I thought there might be some bigger effects in there. So as we'll go along, what I did to get to the next part of the discussion was some regression analysis, but sort of a preview for that and getting at sort of this change in net merit or value across the production system. We'll look at a question here for you. I was surprised by the answer. I had lots of surprises in this. I'm a great meat scientist or anything, so I hadn't thought about these questions a lot. Improving average marbling score via selection from 60% choice and higher to 80% choice and higher results in how much value change in terms of net merit due to correlated changes in other traits when you select for marbling. And your choices are zero change, increases in net merit from $0 to $20 per head, $50 to $75 per head, or greater than $100 per head in terms of net merit. Guys are smarter than I am. I guessed it was going to be on top of between 50 and 75, and it turns out it's just maybe not to give away all the results, but most of the increases are somewhere between 0 and 20, and we'll see here in just a second some of the math I used to come up with that, or at least some of the results. So I did a multiple genetic regression, so I used the variance-covariance structure that Wade and I put together to come up with, if I change incrementally each one of those marbling scores, and they're illustrated there on the very right of each of those tables, from 50 to 60 or 60 to 70, 70, 80, 80 to 90% choice, we see a marbling increase, and that's in percentage of small zero. So a 1.2 is reflective of basically a small 99 marbling score. So you had to do it multiplicatively to get the math to sort out. You can go down each one of those columns, and there's almost no change in either traits in the breeding objective or in the selection criteria there in the bottom section. There's some little changes. You know, if we look in the bottom block there, yearling weight goes down a little bit as we increase marbling score. Yield grade goes up just a little bit. Of course, marbling responds as we'd expect. You know, not big changes in any one of those traits. Again, because those correlations we talked about earlier are relatively small across those traits. So what I did then was take and look at two different selection index economic weightings. One of these, the 2006 API value, are actually the ones that American Simmental Association uses to publish their current API selection index, or all-purpose index. And that particular index weights reproductive efficiency, fertility, stayability more heavily than it does some of the carcass merit traits. And what you see there is you increase percent choice and higher, we see about a $5 spread from top to bottom in that, in terms of changes in net merit due to selection on marbling. So not big changes. The very right column there is change in net merit under sort of an experimental preliminary set of economic weights from a new index model that Mike's developed that has some significantly different features from the current API model that Simmental uses. And one of those is discounting of both genetics and cost of production of those cows over their productive lifetime. So it has a tendency to weight traits in sort of current marketing scenarios or traits that are harvested earlier in an animal's life, like carcass, more heavily than some of the reproductive and stability traits. And what you see there is there's a spread from zero up to about $15, and those are incremental between each one, so a total of $43.70 change in net merit, and that's the influence of both increases in marbling and then the correlated response across to other traits. And so we don't see a huge impact in terms of change of net merit under either one of those particular scenarios. So some of the assumptions I used when I started off on the project was, first of all, I want to make sure everybody's aware, and Dan alluded to this a little bit in his response to selection slide, that accuracy of prediction and selection intensity and generation interval all play an important role in how much genetic change we see in a particular population. My selection index approach, I ignored those. Because I can think of a great way to incorporate them. And I wanted to sort of see, at the margin anyway, what are some of the potential impacts in terms of maybe the widest changes we might see. Because each of those accuracy of prediction, selection intensity, and generation interval tend to work to reduce the amount of genetic change. Most of those values, with exception of selection interval, is in the denominator, so it's a divisor. The other two are decimal numbers, so we have a tendency to shrink those amounts of genetic improvement. One of the other things is that I assume that if we could make these changes from, say, 60 to 70% choice, that change from a genetic perspective is fully expressed in the phenotype, which may be a bit of a stretch, but we hope to see, and at least some of the clay center data when we look at crossbreed EPD stuff, has a tendency to show our EPDs do a pretty good job at predicting some of those responses in terms of genetic change relative to phenotype. So those are the assumptions anyway, so take them for what they're worth. So I think as we look at, we've seen that the additive changes in genetic merit haven't been that significant in terms of correlated changes when we select for marbling in a single trait sort of fashion, which says that there's probably not a lot of risk as we try and improve genetic potential for marbling score relative to changes in other traits. That's from the additive perspective. If we think about maybe a broader sense of the breeding programs we might use to achieve that increase in marbling score, one of the methods we would use, we would probably implement some kind of selection tool like marbling EPD and use that as a tool to improve marbling score, obviously. But we would probably have a tendency to do that within breed. We would make successive selections within a particular group of or breed of sires to do that. And that results in more increase of a particular breed in that population as a strategy to improve that trait. And so the $64,000 question becomes, do the benefits of that kind of selection or a straight breeding mentality offset the sacrifices we make in terms of heterosis, especially maternal heterosis, because we've decreased that character in our breeding program just because of the strategy we've used to improve that trait. I don't know how many of you would have a similar experience. When I went to college, I thought, my dad doesn't know nothing about nothing. Got out of college, got working for a while, and most of you would probably agree, your parents got smarter and smarter and smarter, right? Well, one of the things I remember distinctly, maybe my third or fourth year out of my master's program, was sitting around after Christmas dinner talking about cows, right? So we're talking about the industry, and this would have been in the mid to late 90s. Value-based marketing was getting to be a big deal, and so I was all charged up about, we need to select for in-product traits. And my dad says, well, why would I give up, he's a big proponent of crossbreeding, why would I give up $100 worth of heterosis to achieve a $50 premium if I could achieve that in a grid marketing system? And it's really a legitimate question. We've got to be careful and think about our total production system, especially if we're commercial cow-calf producers, about where our revenue comes from. And certainly if we sell calves at weaning time, like most of us do, we have an obligation to pay attention to end product merit, but we also have an obligation to make sure we pay the bills and keep our families fed and our businesses running. So focusing on the traits that are important economically to our particular production segment has a lot of merit. So in summary here, I really want to say that our selection strategies really should focus on both additive and non-additive. So using EPDs and using crossbreeding systems appropriately to achieve the genetic levels and genetic potentials that we want. We can't overlook either one. I think at BIF maybe sometimes we have a tendency to focus on the additive stuff a lot. That's our record keeping, our EPD calculation, all of those things focus on additive genetic merit and additive selection. But we can't overlook the value of heterosis. And I want to spend just a second. I've used this example a lot in my extension programs in Missouri. And Harlan Hughes and Harlan Ritchie and a number of others have come up with similar numbers. But if you take a selection example, and I won't go clear through this, but using the literature values in a production system, you can pretty easily show that if you maximize heterosis, say, in an F1 terminal sire kind of system, that's worth about $100 per cow per year above a straight breeding program. Those are big dollars, and those are real dollars. And it's important that we recognize if we're going to make trade-offs in our selection system away from a system that effectively uses heterosis, we need to know how many dollars we need to offset in terms of additive selection. This is just an illustration that I think a lot of people are pretty surprised when they, at least the producers I talked to in Missouri, how quickly you can lose, and I apologize, the red doesn't show up on that screen near as good as it does on my laptop, but the amount of heterosis you lose is pretty dramatic and pretty quick. If you've done a couple of generations of selection within breed, you can pretty easily find yourself at about 25% of the heterosis of the F1s. So you want to use caution in terms of balancing that selection strategy to both improve additive merit and make sure we don't compromise too much in terms of heterosis or hybrid vigor. So I want to conclude with an illustration. A lot of the things we've talked about today have talked about correlations and sort of what happens on average within the population. And that's certainly a pretty good perspective to have. But it's also important to note that that may not be the individual realization that you experience on your particular farm or ranch. We know that there's a lot of variation in genetics. Pete did a nice job illustrating some of the variation our business experiences. If we concentrate selection on just one or two or three traits, we have some considerable risk. On average, it may not look like a lot, but we certainly have to be aware that in a particular herd of cows, due to the genetics that may exist in that population or the sires we bring in, we may not get that average response. So we still have to use a little bit of caution. I'm not going to give the free check or blank check to you all to go and say, well, we can select for marbling without consequence. I think the risk is relatively low, but there's certainly still some risk. The good news is that we can offset some of that or at least mitigate those responses by continued use and development of selection index tools. If we include those kind of traits that have antagonisms or correlated responses that we don't find very favorable in our production system, if we include that in our selection criteria or breeding objective in our selection index, we can take care of that to a large degree. So with that, I'm going to stop and be glad to answer maybe a couple of quick questions if anybody has those. And Mark, again, thanks for the invitation.